Translation: when a substance and its parts are separated, the acceptance of similarity between one and the other is called illusion. While dreaming, one creates a separation between the existences called wakefulness and sleep. It is in such a state of mind that the regulative principles of the scriptures, consisting of injunctions and prohibitions, are recommended. So once again, we're so thankful we have Bhaktivedanta purports to unpack these puzzling, puzzling verses. When I took philosophy of religion, philosophy of Eastern religions in college, the most bewildered person in the class was the professor, because he had read more than we had. He was an Advaita Vedantist, you know. So as soon as he would say something, he would think of something to contradict it in the Vedas, and he would just giggle. Therefore, we were left giggling. You know, that's basically the purport of that class. So luckily, we have Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, holding up his transcendental magnifying glass, you know, to the verse, and with the light of the previous acharyas, and by dint of his own unprecedented realizations spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, he's able to draw out of the verse what we can't see. Purport: in material existence, there are many regulative principles and formalities. If material existence is temporary or false, this does not mean that the spiritual world, although similar, is also false. That one's material body is false or temporary does not mean that the body of the Supreme Lord is also false or temporary. The spiritual world is real, and the material world is similar to it. For example, in the desert, we sometimes find a mirage. But although the water in a mirage is false, this does not mean that there is no water in reality. Water exists, but not in the desert. Similarly, nothing real is in this material world, but reality is in the spiritual world. The Lord's form and his abode, Goloka Vrindavan, in the Vaikuntha planets, are eternal realities. From Bhagavad Gita, we understand that there is another prakriti, or nature, which is real. This is explained by the Lord himself in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 8:19-21. Bhutagramaksa evayam bhutva bhutva praliyate ratriyagameva shakparta prabhavatyaharagame parastasmat bhavonyo vyakto vyaktat sanatanah yaksa sarveshu bhuteshu nashyat sanava nashyati avyakto kshara ityuktas tamahuk paramangatim yam prahapyana nivartante tadhama paramang mamam. Quote: again and again the day of Brahma comes and all living beings are active, and again the night falls, O Partha, and they are helplessly dissolved. Yet there is another nature, which is eternal and is transcendental to this manifested and unmanifested matter. It is supreme and is never annihilated. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. That supreme abode is called unmanifested and infallible, and it is the supreme destination. When one goes there, he never comes back. That is my supreme abode. Closed quote. And then Srila Prabhupada ends by saying, the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. The material world is temporary or false, but the spiritual world is an eternal reality. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Mulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto my spiritual master, who has opened my eyes, which were blinded by the darkness of ignorance, with the torchlight of knowledge. So, bhakti, the bhakti life that Srila Prabhupada has given us, it frees us, it wakes us up from our dreamlike state. One of the best verses in the Bhagavad Gita that draws a clear distinction between this world and the next is in the second chapter. Famous verse, if you know it. Na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha, ubhayor api drishtontast vanayos tatvadarshami. Those who are seers of the truth have concluded that of the non-existent, the material body, there is no endurance, and of the eternal, the soul, there is no change. This they have concluded by studying the nature of both. So, both in the verse and the purport, there's two words used interchangeably, false and temporary. So, this material world and this material body, they are false, because as soon as you think it's solid or real, then it changes. Like the old expression, you never step in the same river twice. In his famous poem, O Saragrahi Vaishnav, by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which he wrote in 1871 while at Jagannath Puri. Famous, we all know some of the stanzas. And the Thakur, he wrote this poem tracing the fall of the jiva and the redemption of the jiva. It's like a mini Jiva Dharma. He wrote it in a very popular rhyme scheme of the day, or meter of the day, that British and American poets were using. Emily Dickinson wrote very much in this meter. It's alternating lines of iambic tetrameter and trimeter. And while reciting it once in the shower, I discovered that you could sing it to the tune of America the Beautiful. So the first stanza goes like this. Alas for those who spend their days in festive mirth and joy, the dazzling, deadly liquid forms. Dazzling, deadling liquid forms. Always, ever changing. Their hearts for'er employ. The shining bottles charm their eyes and draw their hearts' embrace. The slaves of wine can never rise from what we call disgrace. So then you get the soul goes down, 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 you know, just like in that old Gita painting from the Mimila Gita. There's the stairway, and the stairway's leading up, and the stairway's leading down. And then at some point in the poem, the Thakur turns, and you see him, and all of a sudden, by the grace of the pure devotee, he starts to be redeemed. And then by the end of the poem, it's very triumphant. Oh, Sara Grahi Vaishnav soul. Now he's a Sara, essence, Grahi, one who grasps. Sara Grahi Vaishnav is a devotee who can grasp the essence of life. Oh, Sara Grahi Vaishnav soul, thou art an angel fair. Lead me on to Vrindavan. Let spirit's power declare. There rests my soul from matter free upon my lover's arms. Eternal peace and spirit's love are all my chanting charms. That's the perfection of America the Beautiful, and it's the perfection of that rhyme scheme. Actually, if you look, our god sister Urmila Mataji, she did a little research because she had a hunch that the Thakur had read something that inspired this, and sure enough, she found a poem by Longfellow that is very similar to this poem, only in a reflected way. But so the Thakur, he did it better because he connected it to Krishna. He put the one in front of all the beautiful zeros, all the beautiful meters and rhymes and stuff like that. So, this material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. 1974, I was in Chicago, and there was Srila Prabhupada came to town, you know. And it was the first time a pure devotee had been in Chicago, to my knowledge. And it was really good that he had come for so many reasons. But one reason was because you know, 81 years previous to his coming to Chicago, another, from our point of view, rather infamous person had come to Chicago. I won't say his name. Following Srila Prabhupada. Anyway, he was invited to the World Parliament of Religions. You may know who I'm speaking of, to represent, you know, Hinduism. So he infamously said, "What is all this talk of God? I see so many gods loitering in the street before me." Right? Daridra Narayan. So there was Srila Prabhupada. He'd come to participate in Ratha Yatra. So, by Chris's grace, I got to ride on Srimati Subhadra Devi's cart, and we were throwing, I think, bags of peanuts and raisins prasadam off the top of the cart, and His Divine Grace was below in the cart sitting, and three carts down State Street, Heavy Street, Chicago, State Street. The only line that I ever, this is like a confession, from the old days, 1972, I remember being in State Street distributing back to Godheads. And in the din of riveters and traffic and just general, you know, Holocaust, dungeon of demons kind of vibration, we were actually arrested on State Street for chanting Hare Krishna. For that matter, I was arrested on Oxford Street chanting Hare Krishna in 78. But in State Street, we were chanting in Harinam next to some riveters. You know, they were riveting. And we were arrested. The charge was noise pollution, if you can believe it. Anyway, so the only line that I found that would stop people in Chicago in this din was I'd go up to the people and I'd say in their ear, "Stop or I'll kill you." And then they'd go, "What?" And they'd stop. And then you'd had a chance to say something more, you know. But if you didn't say something completely outrageous, Seth Rupenharz was leading our party, and he was trying to do what we were doing. And he actually saw him faint against a building. He fainted, and then he got up. We helped him up, and he said, "I think I have to take a break." And he goes in the van and he writes a BTG article. That's what he was supposed to be doing anyway, not doing what we were doing, you know, slugging it out with people on the street. So anyway, so again, 74, and we're going down State Street, and we're going toward this place called Civic Center, and I'm thinking, this Swami, in 1893, he said to Ridra Narayan, "I wonder what Srila Prabhupada's going to say." Sure enough, we get to the Civic Center. Everything stops. Prabhupada gives his address. "Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for coming here, for so kindly coming here. In the Vedanta Sutra, it is said, Janmad yasyagataha. The absolute truth is that from whom everything emanates." He didn't even say which, he said whom. And I said, "Yes." So, in that time, different things happen. Our Jayadwada Maharaj has his kirtan reform seminar. Well, also, we experienced a little dancing reform seminar one fine morning. Actually, when Prabhupada arrived in Chicago, he came in right at Guru Puja time. And so, you know, wherever Prabhupada went, there was hundreds of devotees would congregate. So that was the first thing that happened. We had this thunderous, you know, Guru Puja. But during the Guru Puja, Srila Prabhupada noticed his followers boogieing. You know, we were dancing like rock and roll people. The shingaling, the twist, you know, the boogaloo and all this stuff. And Prabhupada's looking at us, you know, he's looking. And from thunderous kirtan, Prabhupada, with a movement of his finger, this is the power of our founder Acharya, he goes like this, like stop. And we go from thunder to silence in a nanosecond. Can you imagine this? You know, you're just like pandemonium to freeze. And we're like... So in that pregnant pause, Srila Prabhupada raises his arms, gestures to a painting of the Panchatattva behind us, and we all look. And he says, dance, dance like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yeah. And then we, you know, go ahead. So we went forward. Okay, so we were visiting from Gainesville, Florida. I mean, that's how far, you know, it's like hundreds of miles. So our temple president at the time, Amarendra Prabhu, he told us later that he was in with Srila Prabhupada in his rooms, and he asked Srila Prabhupada about sense gratification. What is it? Is it real? You know, it's a figment of my imagination. What is it? So Srila Prabhupada said, sense gratification is real because it comes from Krishna. Anything that comes from Krishna can't be false. And then, you know, comma, then Srila Prabhupada said, but it is, sense gratification is. And then as he said the last word, he took his fingers, he spanned his fingers as far as they could go. And by the time he finished saying the word is restricted. It is restricted. He said, it is restricted. And by the time he said the D and restricted, you could barely see a space between his fingers. So that's the nature of this material world. This is the prison house portion of the creation. Tava Itcha Maya Kar Srije Karagar, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings. O youthful prince of Braja, by your will, Maya has created the prison house of the material world. So when you go to a prison, you ever been in a prison? It's no fun. Everything is restricted. Everything is restricted. Your movements, you know, what you do, when you do it, it's all dictated. So this is the prison house portion of the creation. Now contrast the why is it restricted? Because, for the example's sake, because everybody's desires have been so corrupted, their mentality is criminal. No, so they call it correctional institution. Of course, really, it's just schools to learn how to be better criminals in Kali Yuga. But for the example's sake, the idea is you go to the correctional institution and your mentality is corrected. So that's what the material world is. It's a place for us to be reformed, corrected. So if you're in a correctional institution, or like a hospital, Prabhupada would give that metaphor too. You know, you're in the hospital, you're trying to get better, the diet is Krishna prasadam, the medicine is the holy name, chanting Hare Krishna. But everything's restricted, you know, while you're getting better. You can only eat this, and, you know, you have to be very regulated in everything. Why? Because you're in a diseased condition. So in the spiritual world, there's no restrictions. So here, for example, you have a very nice goshala, the cow palace. I've never seen a goshala like this, you know. The cows live better than some people somewhere, you know. Probably most people in the world these days, especially in a place like Syria, you know. Okay, so, you know, if you want to get the milk, they milk twice a day here? I would imagine they do. It's pretty standard. Morning and evening. And that's when you get the milk, morning and evening. And meanwhile, the cow's chewing her cud. She takes the simple grass that we don't eat, as Prabhupada would always say, and she makes the miracle food, milk, as it is here, milk, real milk. But only twice a day. But in the spiritual world, you can go up to a Surabhi cow anytime. And milk her. Why? Because your desire in the spiritual world, our desires are not illicit. They're constitutional. They're in harmony with Krishna. Everything's it's unrestricted. Because everybody here, we take everything here as paraphernalia for our sense gratification. In the spiritual world, the residents of the free world, real world, take everything as to be offered, as gifts of Krishna to be offered to Krishna. So there's no restriction. Because the desire is pure, therefore the supply is unlimited. Or the kalpavriksha. Here we can only get apples or oranges or, you know, in the spiritual world. Right? So you go up to a desire tree, kalpa vriksha, you get any kind of fruit, you hear Prabhupada say in the record, any amount of fruit. No restriction. So that's home. And that's where we want to go. Where every step is a dance, all speech is song. Okay. So now in the Bhagavad Gita also there's another nice verse which gives us an idea of, you know, where we are and where we need to go. The chapter is called Purushottam Yog 15. The lead off verse. Urdvamula madhakshakam ashvatang prahoravyayam chandang siyasya parnani yastang vedasavedavit. There is a banyan tree, Krishna says, which has its roots upward and its branches down, and whose leaves are the Vedic hymns. One who knows this tree is the knower of the Vedas. So, you only see that roots up, Prabhupada points out, when you go to a body of water and you see the real tree reflected, you know, in the roots, it's upside down. So that's where we live. We live, you know, in Wonderland, through the looking glass, where everything is upside down, backwards. And so the root is Brahmalok, and the branches go down, and Prabhupada, and it says in the succeeding verses, Karmanu Bandini Manusha Loke. These human planetary systems is where we generate karma. Karmanu Bandini Manusha, planets of humans, Loke. And whose leaves are the Vedic hymns. You know, when winter comes, everything is very stark, and you see it as it is, the tree standing naked, you know, tolerating the onslaught of the winter season. But when spring comes, and then the leaves come, and it looks so beautiful and pretty, and it looks like, gee, maybe this is the spiritual world. But no, you know, you have to go through all these changes and cycles, the dazzling, deadly liquid forms. So we're living in the winter season of time. Not only is it the material world, but we're living in the very stark, brutal Kali Yuga. So how to come out of that? Well, the key is the spiritual master. The key is the spiritual master. The spiritual masters, Bande Guru Nisha Bhaktan, Krishna's Adi Guru, and then his whole sampradaya system, sampradaya vihinaye mantraste nishpalamata. And then we have powerful founders of branches, like our founder Acharya. And we have shiksha gurus, and we have diksha gurus. And they're outside our dream. Especially, you know, people who are really mukta purushas. As Prabhupada told one disciple in Montreal early on, the question must have been, it's one of those letter things where you don't know what the question was, but the question must have been something like, I can't imagine what the question, and here's the answer. The answer was, there are two kinds of gurus, a liberated category, and then also somebody who's strictly following, but he's not necessarily liberated yet, he can also act as guru. You hear Prabhupada say a lot, little thing, strictly following, little thing. You know, one of those beautiful understatements. Little thing, strictly following. So the spiritual masters, especially the super powerful people like Founder Acharya, or those who are strictly following too, they're trying to wake us up. But sometimes we're so sound asleep. Yeah, susupti, they call it, right? Deep sleep. You know, even deeper than dreaming, that we we succeed in incorporating the sound, the external stimuli, into our sleep. So the alarm clock might go off, and if we're really sleeping soundly, and if the alarm is a little, if we've put it, you know, way on the other side of the room, then we might incorporate that sound into our dream, right? It can become like a fire engine in the dream or something like that. And this is what we tend to do in the beginning stages especially. We tend to try to bring the spiritual master, not even consciously, but we do it, into our dream. And this is why Prabhupada would say, try to understand. And then he would say, try not to misunderstand. Because we tend to do that. We tend to hear through our desire filter. You know, our late great Sariputta Prabhu used to talk about the knowledge filter, how the scientists conveniently, only admit those things that jive with their paradigm. And they dismiss the anomalies, which turns out to be most of what we're receiving through our knowledge acquiring senses. More insidious, I think, is the desire filter, which we may be conscious of, we may not be conscious of. And we tend to hear the spiritual master just the way we like to hear. Sometimes in communications experts talk about 5 levels of hearing. Listening. It's a listening where you're actually not listening at all. You're not listening at all. You're completely ignoring, but you're kind of pretending to listen. And then they talk about selective listening, where you're only hearing the things you want to hear. And meanwhile, you're hearing those things and you're processing it and you're making it fodder for what you're going to say. You know, like that. That's called dysfunctional interaction. When two people are talking, there's no real communication going on. They're just firing words at each other like that. And then there's a level of listening that's what we need to come to. It's called attentive listening. And Srila Prabhupada talks about this in his purport to 1.3.44. No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. No one can be pure in mind who is not pure in action. And no one can be pure in action who is not pure in his eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And this is completely an echo of what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. In the 3rd chapter, Krishna, Arjuna asks the question, why do I act, why do we act even against our will, it seems? And Krishna says, lust only. And then Krishna begins to give the remedy. Tasma tvam indriyanyadau niyamya bharatarshava patmanam prajahihyenam jnanavijnana nashanam. Therefore, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. Why the senses? Because in the purport previous, Prabhupada described how lust, Prabhupada called it Mr. Lust. Mr. Lust has captured strategic points in the field of our activities, the senses, the mind, and the intelligence. So why do we attack lust at the sensual level? Because it's the grossest level. It's the most obvious level. It's the level we can get a handle on the easiest. Because we're superior to dull matter. What is it? The senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind. And the soul is even higher than the intelligence. So this is where we begin our reformation, our restoration, our cure, right at the sensual level, the working senses, the knowledge-acquiring senses. Therefore, this whole morning program is a genius application of Srila Rupa Goswami's statement in Bhaktivrasamrita Sindhu 1.2.90-92, that of all those 64 devotional principles, those principal activities that I've itemized, there's 5 that are most important. What are they? The 5 most... Prabhu. Yes, living in a sacred place. You can make your home a holy place if you make your home like a temple. And so here we are, Bhaktivedanta Manor, sacred space where His Divine Grace personally sat and is still here in His everlasting Vani. What else? Huh? Yeah, hear the Bhagavatam. You got to speak in plain English. I'm unlettered. You got to go ahead. Yeah, we're associating with devotees. Now we're going to look at that in a minute because that's how we usually say it. But there's more. Rupa has. There's more to that. What else? Chanting Hare Krishna. And worshipping the deity. Right. Now, Srila Rupa Goswami, when he says, associate with devotees, you know what he actually says? Associate with like-minded devotees who are pure, more elevated, and self-realized. In other words, he's challenging us, always seek better and better association. Because that's the way we advance. It's like people would ask Srila Prabhupada, you can hear this on recordings, Srila Prabhupada, how do you become a pure devotee?
How do you become drunkard?
If you associate, Prabhupada said, with drunks, they'll teach you how to be first-class drunk. So similarly, we're here to give each other good association by associating with His divine grace and each other. This is a place where we can uplift each other like that. And this is how we're uplifted out of the false, temporary, material world. So, anything else here? We're meant to become sadjanas, real people living in the real world. And here we are, in the space we can do it, especially. And then we're meant to share it to help everyone else. You know, wandering through this this holocaust, Nirottam Das Thakur says, it calls it a holocaust, living holocaust. So I'll stop here. If you have any questions or comments.